Hello everyone, my name is Ramachandran. I'm the practice leader for engineering and manufacturing at HFS Research. Today we are privileged to have with us Gopal Ratnam, Executive Vice President and Global CMO at Philips. Gopal has transformed Philips into a strong solutions leader in health tech domain, owning and implementing IT transformation initiatives and leveraging technologies to better serve his customers. Thank you for taking your valuable time, Gopal. Very happy to have you with us today.
Thanks, Ram. Thanks for inviting me.
So we live in a world where software is increasingly controlling the functionality of products, what we call software-defined products. Even artificial intelligence, very advanced AI tools are getting embedded on the edge in devices for what we call physical AI. So to start with, Gopal, software is increasingly becoming the differentiating factor in products. If you look at the automotive industry, software-defined vehicles are very popular as an example. So how mature do you see this trend happening in the medical devices? What are the popular applications of software-defined healthcare, if I may call it? So we can start with that, with your thoughts.
I think it's a very good question. See, the transition towards software-defined products in medical devices is very mature, and it's also a rapidly evolving trend, you know, much like what you said in the automotive industry, where vehicle capabilities are increasingly defined by over-the-air updates, real-time updates, and algorithms rather than just mechanical components. The medical field has adopted a regulatory and operational framework that is known as Software as a Medical Device, so SAMD. And so what has happened here is the industry has moved beyond the early adopter phase. And if you look at examples where the maturity of this trend can be confirmed, the established regulatory frameworks of global bodies like the FDA in the US or EMA in Europe, they have established specific rigorous guidelines, or SAMD. So this allows manufacturers to iterate on software without needing to seek entirely new approvals for the underlying hardware every time you have an update. And so they've decoupled hardware and software, and you see that everywhere in diagnostic imaging like MRI or CT scanners that now receive software updates without actually changing the physical asset significantly. And obviously the data-centric value, so the core value propositions for many devices, has shifted from the sensor to the actionable insight that is generated by the software. And so you asked about applications in software-defined healthcare, AI-powered diagnostic imaging, X-rays, MRI, CTs, Internet of Medical Things, and remote monitoring, like your continuous glucose monitors, your smart pacemakers and wearable patches. You also see applications in digital therapeutics, essentially delivered through a smartphone for things like chronic pain management and so on. And then robotic surgery platforms. Of course, surgeons control robotic arms via software-defined consoles that also provide scaling, etc., etc. So where you see this is very pervasive. The medical device industry has progressed to a point where software is no longer just a support system. It is the core driver of innovation, of clinical efficacy, as well as commercial differentiation.
That's very insightful, Gopal. You mentioned a lot of interesting points, so we'll try to go into each one of them. So to continue this discussion, you spoke about the maturity. So the next level of maturity in software-defined healthcare could be maybe physical AI, for example, right? So where AI is embedded and autonomous decisions are taken. So how do you see physical AI being adopted in this trend that you explained now? What are the challenges the industry is facing in adopting physical AI in the healthcare domain?
Yeah. So this transition to physical AI is absolutely underway within healthcare. So we are moving essentially past traditional remote-controlled or teleoperated devices towards systems that can perceive, reason, or even act in real time without needing a constant connection to a cloud server. Now, this whole move towards the edge, etc., is no longer theoretical. Convergence of high-performance localized computing, as well as advanced robotics, is visible across several domains. And I'll just talk a little bit about a couple of those domains. So if you look at surgical robotics, earlier the whole concept was have this master-slave teleoperation, where the robot essentially mimics the surgeon's hand movements. Now that has moved away from that to what we call intelligent co-piloting. And there, what actually happens is the robot actually is able to do autonomous activities, like, for example, remote suturing on soft tissues. And it does that at a higher consistency than human beings. And therefore, this is something that is becoming more and more prevalent. On the diagnostic imaging side, a big part of the productivity and the efficiency that is gained in these operations is having the ability for the system to actually position the patient in a more optimal way. And today, a lot of time is actually lost in trying to adjust the patient so that they actually fit the bed or they fit the imaging platform. However, the system is now able to do it first time right. What does this therefore do? It reduces the amount of time needed to actually do the imaging. It compensates for patient movement as well as the nuances of the anatomy of the patient in order to deliver the highest quality image without needing a technician to guide every little aspect of it. However, you asked about the challenges. While the potential is huge, implementing physical AI is significantly harder in medical and healthcare than other sectors, simply because we have a zero error requirement. Now, the edge problem requires a significant amount of compute. It also requires a sizable amount of power consumption. You cannot have any latency at all because a delay of milliseconds can be catastrophic. At the same time, try telling the regulatory body that you have a black box model. It's very difficult to get approval for something like that, because the environment is very, very dynamic. Ethics and liability also play a very critical role. If the autonomous device makes a surgical error, who is legally responsible? Is it the surgeon who turned on the device? Or is it the hospital which provides the infrastructure for this? Or is it the software vendor who's provided the algorithm? So this ambiguity in liability is a major hurdle for widespread adoption. At the same time, anytime you're operating on the edge, there are issues around security. What is the probability that something might be hacked? Is it actually a bed for cyber attacks and so on? And then finally, the shift towards AI is essentially the shift from medical device acting as a passive tool to actually acting as an intelligent, active partner, both in the operating room as well as the diagnostic clinic. So it comes with a set of challenges that need to be managed very carefully.
It's very encouraging to hear these updates from you, Gopal. You spoke about challenges. So one more challenge that comes to my mind is the synchronization in the life cycle of development of hardware and software. So we are talking about physical, digital coming together. Hardware typically takes years to develop following a waterfall model, while software is agile with sprints consisting of a couple of weeks. So how, as a CEO, how do you address this challenge? How do you see this cell? How can this be addressed?
Yeah, it essentially comes down to synchronizing the waterfall framework, which typically takes months or years, with an agile software lifecycle, which actually moves in days or weeks. That is the central challenge of modern, you know, product engineering. Now, if you look at what companies like Tesla have done in automotive, and now leading medical device manufacturers have now shifted from integrating everything at the end towards a continuous integration throughout the life cycle. And what does that essentially mean? You have to decouple hardware and software. You have to have modular architecture where you actually design the physical device that isn't fully utilized at the launch of a particular product. You put in an abstraction layer through which you actually develop a robust software abstraction capability. That's between the hardware and the feature code. So the other thing that companies have also started doing is to shift left using the concept of digital twins. I know with your background in supply chain and all that, you probably have seen that extensively. This whole notion of creating a virtual prototyping and model-based design is something that medical industry is also leveraging to a large extent. And then, of course, you also need to look at the organizational structure and develop hybrid structures. So instead of having a hardware team and a software team, you now start reorganizing into what we call feature teams. It may, for example, a team may own image processing that includes both the hardware elements for sensor hardware as well as the software engineers for development of the algorithm and as well as enhancement of the algorithm. Ultimately, you also have to have regulatory sandboxes, which obviously in the medical field is very, very important in order to deliver on compliance. So what regulatory bodies are doing is allowing manufacturers to submit plans for how they will actually not only update the hardware, but also the software over time. So fundamentally, this requires bringing in both the hardware and the software teams into one continuous integration kind of a mindset.
So again, how do you see the importance of verification and validation that plays such a big role? It's a big cost component in the overall product lifecycle development. How do you use AI to make it better? Because innovation can happen at a very rapid pace. And like BYD, for example, I heard they have started sending 200 over-the-air upgrades in a year. That's a very high frequency. So how do we see the role of verification and validation, and who's liable for the for any mishap that happens before such any update?
Yeah, I think in the medical device and in the healthcare industry, verification and validation is fundamental, right? I mean, it is obviously the make or break thing here, simply because the standard for verification and validation has to remain at medical grade. What do we mean by medical grade? Top of the line in terms of quality. You simply cannot move fast and break things, because you're talking about people's lives here. And therefore, verification and validation is not just a tick of the box. It is the fundamental safety contract with the patient. And as a result, it's not just about meeting design specs. You really have to think through life cycle management and this constant pursuit of continuous improvement. V&V, as we call it, remains the most important factor in all this. If you accelerate updates without accelerating the validation process, you're not being agile, you're actually being reckless. Therefore, the goal is to actually move from a very manual, document-heavy verification and validation towards a paradigm of continuous compliance, where it's actually completely baked into the code, not bolted on as an afterthought at the end. However, what does this really do in order to address the testing challenge here? You've got to essentially do automated edge ACE generation. You have to do predictive regression testing. You've got to do self-healing test scripts, so on. And it's not just about the AI tool generating your safety tests. You need to be able to prove to regulators that the AI itself is very reliable and free of bias. And you talked earlier about who actually bears the risk in all of this. The world is moving towards more of a shared responsibility model. When a black box AI makes a decision, the legal battle will target multiple layers. So everybody has a stake in this. The equipment manufacturer, the hospital, the health system, the doctor, the clinicians, all of them are essentially on the hook.
And that's a very rigorous process that you explained. That's very interesting. So all these technologies have the potential to bring down the cost. But again, going back to a point that you mentioned at the beginning, regulations are struggling to catch up with the pace of innovation. So we see this velocity gap between the rate at which innovation happens versus the rate at which regulations are catching up. So how do you address this issue as a CMO? How big a problem is it? How do you address that?
Yeah, so this the fundamental thing between the rapid evolution of the physical AI that we talked about, which is your robotics, your autonomous surgical tools, your smart diagnostics, and so on, and basically the deliberate risk-averse nature of healthcare regulation, there is a fundamental disconnect between the two, and that in the industry is what we call a pacing problem. It's a velocity issue. So regulations are not inherently designed to stop or curtail innovation. They're actually designed to make sure that nothing catastrophic happens, particularly in a life-critical kind of a system. However, in the modern world, in the age of AI, your traditional regulatory models can become obsolete if the regulations don't necessarily keep pace with the life cycle-based, you know, regulatory model that the industry is demanding. In the short term, the regulatory burden can be a huge barrier for smaller startups that essentially lack the resources for lengthy approval process. So regulatory bodies are cognizant of this, and they're moving towards more of a dynamic way of managing this kind of a regulation. However, the mismatch in velocity to reconcile the speed of software development with the slow, steady rhythm of regulation, the industry is adopting several structural approaches. I think one approach which is most common that you actually see is what they call a predetermined change control plan, or a PCCP. So instead of requiring a new regulatory submission every time a software update is released, manufacturers can now submit a PCCP, which essentially outlines the types of modifications that they plan to make and the protocols for validating them, instead of actually doing a big bang kind of an approach. Regulators are also increasingly accepting regulatory sandboxes, which are controlled environments where novel AI methodologies can be used under close supervision and observation that can provide some temporary relief. And the other thing that they're also doing is they also recognize that international standards and harmonizing the international standards between the various geographies can also help organizations move faster in their go-to-market kind of an approach.
So in one of your earlier podcasts, you spoke about the importance of data, Gopan. So healthcare industry, again, has fragmented systems. There are privacy issues. So all these technologies are there. The hardware is there. The software is there. But data plays a critical role. So do you see that as a challenge? How do you address this challenge? How can the quality of data be made better, for better impact from the AI and physical AI?
Yeah. So I think if you think about it at a holistic level, the bottleneck in all of this is really not the technology. I really think we have enough capabilities and technologies between compute and sensors and algorithms to actually build amazing things right now. A fundamental bottleneck that holds everybody back is because of three elements here. And the first one is really the governance gap. We talked about regulatory frameworks. The regulatory frameworks generally are designed for static devices, not things that keep evolving. And the second thing, of course, is the technical legacy, which really comes from the fact that healthcare as an industry has a number of data silos and the lack of interoperability between systems. So healthcare data today is trapped in proprietary legal EHR kind of systems that don't necessarily talk easily with one another. The data doesn't really flow easily from one system to another. And you've heard of this term saying that data needs to be liquid. What it essentially means is for data to flow seamlessly between devices and clinics, between patients and clinics, between one device and another device, etc. And if the data doesn't flow, the AI that uses that data will always be trained on incomplete data or biased data or fragmented data sets. And therefore, you don't really see the full power of all this in the decisions that you make. And then finally, the third the friction point is the human element, which is very, very underestimated at this particular point in time. Between the model performance or the AI performance and the clinical trust of the specialist, there is still a gap. If the practitioner does not trust the AI to assist them in a procedure, the technology simply will not be used, however advanced the technology may be. At the end of the day, therefore, it's not one or the other. It's the orchestration problem between these three elements. And unfortunately or fortunately, if you think about where healthcare is headed in 2030, it's really to become AI-driven by 2030. And what the industry is moving towards, what they call a paradigm that is proactive, that is personalized, and that it's also ambient. And let me explain what those three things are. If you look at proactive, it's really about moving away from taking care of sick people to taking care of things proactively. Today, we wait for symptoms to manifest before we intervene. By 2030, that will shift more towards predictive health trajectories and actually preventive healthcare. The second part of it is hyper-personalization. In almost every field, there is specialization and there is focus of the individual. You will see this more and more and more in healthcare, where AI will actually help analyze a patient's profile at the micro level, and you will see healthcare pathways for specific individuals rather than the trial and error, the trial and testing error that normally clinical trials do today. And then the third part of it is really ambient intelligence. What do we mean by ambient intelligence? Which is the administrative burden, the documentation, the typing of the notes, the scheduling. A lot of that will be handled by AI agents. That's what is going to make AI-driven healthcare successful in 2030.
Great conversation, Gopal. You've given us a lot of food for thought on so many topics that we can go back and look upon. So to wind up this conversation, to summarize it, you just touched upon how healthcare will be in 2030. What could be the North Star? Will healthcare become affordable with all these technologies? Where do you see healthcare with physical AI, where do you see the state by 2030?
See, I think, you know, healthcare is undergoing a serious transition right now. It's moving away from being hardware-centric. It's becoming more software-defined. And finally, it's going to move towards physical AI enablement. Therefore, what are we doing? We are not just building, you know, better hardware to solve a particular healthcare problem. We are fundamentally changing the way medical systems and healthcare systems are moving away from being a safety net, which is a very reactive thing, to something which is more proactive, and you can call it becoming a guardian of good health or anything like that. So this whole move towards this proactive, personalized ambient environment, leveraging AI, is completely going to change the face of healthcare in 2030. Not only will it deliver healthcare at lower cost, it will be more holistic, it will be more reliable. At the same time, it frees up time for the healthcare specialist to actually do what they do best, which is deliver healthcare for patients. So it's really an opportunity for the technology, in this case, the AI-enabled technology, to be a true partner for the human being who's actually delivering healthcare. So I feel very, very optimistic about the future of healthcare and the role that the technology plays in order to deliver superior healthcare to all of us.
Wonderful conversation, Gopal. It's very encouraging to hear from an expert like you, as technology enthusiasts have, on where healthcare is headed been using all these technologies. So thank you once again for taking your valuable time and sharing these amazing insights with us. I'm sure many of us will find it very useful. We look forward to staying in touch with you. Thanks again for taking your time. We appreciate your time so much.
Thank you, Ram. Appreciate it.